It's April, Thursday 26th, 2013. You're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to Episode 11. Really, you should be listening to Episode 64. Running time for this episode is 38 minutes. Hello, and welcome to Last Time on Video Games. My name is Jeremy.
And I'm Tyler.
And I'm Zach.
Yes, joining us today, gentle listeners, is one of my best and oldest friends, a man who we have not been able to do this podcast without talking about, a man who is very good at first-person shooters and other things, Zach.
Who, coincidentally, is also part of our tabletop gaming group. So, Zach, talk about yourself.
Yeah, Zach, what was the first video game you ever played?
I think it was actually Sonic 2 on the Genesis, because I think that was the first console I ever had. Still have it.
I didn't know you owned a Genesis, actually.
We went over this 2 weeks ago. To you.
We pulled it out and looked at it.
No, I saw the cartridges, which I've always seen. I didn't know you actually owned a Genesis.
No, I just bought the cartridges for fun. I liked looking at them.
Well, you know, some people have weird hobbies.
Well, the only one that I really remember too much about is either the Mutant League football or hockey games. And there was also this VR Troopers. You guys remember that?
Yeah,
that
series?
Awful show? Yeah.
Well, it had the Green Ranger when he wasn't going to be the Green Ranger anymore. But then they're like, be the Green Ranger again. So he quit VR Troopers.
There was a 2D fighting game. And
of course there was.
The Genesis had two different controllers. One of which had the XYZ buttons in addition to the ABC.
Oh, yeah, the six button controller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those had all the special attacks keyed to them.
So you couldn't play it, right? Or you couldn't do the special moves, rather?
Well, that might be why I'm so kneecapped when it comes to 2D fighters now.
Because you expect a special move button?
I want the special move button back, man!
You've learned, though. That's actually a big debate I've gotten into with someone before, is whether or not there should be buttons mapped to special moves so you don't have to remember the key combinations. I actually kind of fall on the yes, it should be mapped side. Because your inability to input controls correctly should not inhibit your ability to fight in a 2D
fighter. Your problem with a control stick doesn't really help you anything, does it?
No, it doesn't. If it was a real joystick, that'd be awesome. Like the one on the Genesis gamepad thing. Jeremy's familiar with that after Gunstar Heroes.
Yes, familiar is a word.
I think I remember seeing you guys messing with that at one point, but I never used it.
Oh, the giant gamepad thing?
Yeah.
It looks like an arcade cabinet, only it's been taken out and attached to a Genesis.
Pretty much. I have two regular Genesis controllers with the six-button layout, but one of them doesn't work. And it was actually a replacement for another one that didn't work in basically the exact same manner.
Hey, that sounds like my problem.
Your problem is more self-inflicted.
Yeah, I didn't throw any of my controllers against a wall.
Hey. I've never thrown them against a wall.
Yes, you have. I've watched you do it.
No, I never hit the wall.
I have seen you explode a controller against a wall.
I don't remember that.
Anyway.
I blew up my phone.
All right, so Zach, what's your favorite video game?
That's a difficult question.
We're just with you people and not wanting to commit to favorite games.
Because different games in different genres.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the thing. I think the game that got me to really be game or anything is Halo, which neither of you two own. Well, you do now, don't you?
I own an Anniversary Edition.
I actually own Halo, I just don't have an Xbox anymore, so...
Oh, yeah, I remember. You gave it away with my copy of Most Wanted in it.
No, I meant my 360, which caught fire while I was playing Oblivion.
Well, you did give your Xbox away with my copy of Most Wanted in it.
Well,
thanks,
Zach,
a lot.
Since you haven't talked enough yet, why don't you start on what you've been playing recently?
I have split my attentions between the, 2, 3 years old now? Virtual console, My Life as a King?
It's 2007 it came out. It was one of the first virtual console. It's not technically the virtual console, because that's only old games that
WiiWare.
Are under that. WiiWare, that's what it's called. The Wii equivalent of the Xbox Live Arcade, which never really took off. But yeah, that was one of the first games released for it. It's old.
Is it? I've never heard of this game.
Really?
Oh,
we haven't
you
talked
haven't?
About it?
No, I've never heard of this.
It's actually quite a lot of fun. You play a king, and you know the guy who gives you quests in Final Fantasy? You know, it's like, hey, go save the princess, or something like that. You play that guy, because you enlist all these adventurers and send them out to go, you know, hey, go find this. There's a lot more to it, like you build stuff. For
it's
them and a lot of
okay, so
things.
It's kind of like Lords of Waterdeep, but as a video game?
Kind of. It's not competitive. You have to build, like, gambling halls so you can get thieves and training halls to train your fighters and, like, a black mage academy so you can start to get black mages and emporiums so you can get imported torches and antidotes and stuff.
Huh.
The other one I've been playing a lot of is, in my opinion, the best game of last year, which was XCOM. I mean, you guys keep talking about how I rail against the fact that first-person shooters are all the friggin' same game, so here's XCOM, top-down tactical action. Yes!
XCOM has gotten generally favorable reviews everywhere, so...
I played it. It is really good. You would really like it, probably. You have to manage your squad. It's actually kind of like the game we
played
this
week. I think
I died,
didn't I?
Yes, you died in my game on the last level. You were killed. You were killed by Ed because you turned into a zombie and he shot you.
Even when Ed isn't actually playing the game, he's griefing Tyler.
All the goddamn time. I don't understand how this keeps happening.
In fact, the only people who made it out of my game alive were Cody and your wife.
Yes, because Alex would be the first person to survive an alien invasion.
Well, she was a sniper. The two of you were
the
only snipers I got the entire game. No, she wasn't in this room. She got the final kill.
I gotta say, the last level, just the way they operated it, once you beat it once, oh, I see how I can totally break this over my knee and kill the bad guy without actually incurring any damage.
Yeah, it's really dumb. When you kill the final boss, the ship just explodes and everyone else dies and lets you do whatever you want. It's not great.
It's rather convenient.
Well, to be fair, it would be really hard because there's three Ethereals in there and they all mind control. So half your unit would be mind controlled.
Mind shields.
They're expensive.
Loud whispering.
They're expensive, so I never had any.
Jeremy, what have you been playing?
League of Legends and Kingdom of Loathing.
I'm shocked.
I was writing up the show notes for Mystical Ninja, and the first thing I said is, what have we been playing? Spoilers! Jeremy's been playing the same things he's been playing.
I've also been continuing to play Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Storm 3 XD Go Time Force.
Super happy time.
I actually was playing this when he first got it. We played it against each other. It's actually quite good.
You should play a round or two before you go.
It actually looks pretty awesome, and I'm a pretty big fan of the Naruto fighting games, even though there's not a whole lot of differentiation between the characters. It's a button mash fest, and it's amazing.
You remember back on the PS2, you had that, what was it, like actual, was it like Ninja Storm or
no,
something?
No, it's Ultimate Ninja 2. It is an ancestor of the current game, although they're entirely different.
Well, that one was, we spent way too much time on that one.
By way too much time, you mean the exact right amount of time, because it was awesome.
There are over 80 characters in this one. I'm on the final chapter, and there are a bunch left to unlock. So, Tyler, what have you been playing?
I did a 2-day run-through of Ocarina of Time recently, which actually reminds me, I don't know why all villains in video games have, like, giant red bulbous parts that are their weak point, but then don't put armor over them.
Armor off clearly, it's a fashion statement. You know, you are that badass, you don't have to cover up your weak point.
Yeah, but it's like this big bulbous red thing that's like pulsating. You're like, I wonder if I should hit that thing.
Some of the Zelda bosses put armor over them, and then you have to break the armor so you can hit them.
That is true. They should just wear armor everywhere so that you don't know where the red bulbous spot is.
A lot of them just rely on being too tall for you to reach the bulbous spot, and they're like, bombs, what's this bullcrap?
Why did I have these in this place that I live?
You know, Link does carry around a lot of milk, doesn't he? He should probably start drinking some of that to reach their height, you know?
Grow big and strong and also a giant.
Well, there's the giant mask in Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
You really like that one, but I'd never really played it. But
well, you haven't played any Zelda.
I think I just
Zelda,
summed up my Zelda experience.
Sounds right to me. You played the fair chunk of Ocarina, right?
Yeah, I think Jab Jab's belly is where I bowed out.
That's a respectable amount.
I've also been playing Rune Factory Frontier 2.
It's actually not Frontier. Frontier is the Wii one. It's
Rune Factory 2. Sorry.
I like how I'm telling you what you're playing.
Yep. I'm in the second generation now, and it's sweeter than the first generation.
Generation?
Yeah, you have a kid, and then your kid takes over your farm for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the main character, like, I don't know if this is a spoiler, so potential spoilers, kids!
It's a couple of years old. I think we've gotten past the part of spoilers. Oh, wait a minute. You're spoiling it for me. Damn it, I loaned you that game.
It's not that bad. The main character runs off after having a child. And
let's hear for deadbeat dad.
Let me rephrase that. Your character starts out with amnesia, and he recovers his memory and remembers why he came there, and has to go run off to go complete his mission after having the kid. Having the kid is coincidental. In fact, he actually leaves clues all over the village for her so that she can find him again.
I think this episode has to be called Having a Kid Was Coincidental Now.
I haven't gotten that far in 3, but I think I've gotten to the point where everyone in the village is like, let's go mob him! I just don't know how to buy a wedding ring, everybody.
The last thing I've been playing a lot of is Minecraft, but not just Minecraft. I've been playing the Pixelmon mod for Minecraft.
Not to interrupt you, but I'm going to interrupt. I'm going to let you finish, but that reminds
me, bro.
I've been carrying Pokemon Pearl with me to finally play that since I've owned it since it came out and never did. And I finally started it on the way home today.
It's freaking amazing.
I'm not using any Pokemon I've used before. Ethos is not as impressive since I've never played that one before. But I have a Chimchar. I have a Shinx with Intimidate. First try. I didn't even realize it was rare. I've got a Swellow. Right. What's the bird called? I actually like it.
Starly. Oh, yeah, because it evolves into Star Raptor, which is super awesome.
And a sweet Bidoof.
Who's going to trade me for a sweet Bidoof?
Actually, I got this level 4 Bidoof that was freakishly strong. I didn't catch it, but I encountered one. It took out my level 2 Starly. I was like, oh, man, okay, Chimchar, you'll have to do this. And took my Chimchar down to 4 health. I was like, what is this mutant Bidoof, and why is it here?
Well, after my adventures in Emerald, I kind of want to get back into the Pokemon games.
They're really good.
I know. They've always been historically good. But I don't think I can top my luxury ball capture of Rayquaza.
That was pretty good.
That is pretty sweet. Meanwhile, Rakuza's sitting in a hot tub in his Pokeball going, yeah, this is sweet. Screw Groudon. I don't need him.
I've got him on my team, too. I've got all three of them.
So anyway, you're playing Pixelmon.
So there's been a large fan outcry recently for Nintendo, I guess not recently, but always, for Nintendo to make some sort of Pokemon MMO. And this game, or this mod for Minecraft, is everything I wanted out of a Pokemon MMO. It's a 3D environment. You can interact with the environment through your Pokemon, and you basically just wander around playing Minecraft, but also crafting your own Pokeballs to catch things. It's freaking awesome. I currently have a Pidgeot who flies at Mach 3 across the map, and actually flies so fast that my server cannot keep up with loading my map.
That's always the best.
Sounds like a lot of fun, but that would require Minecraft.
It would. I also got a Gyarados today, and have been riding my Gyarados across the ocean.
For no better reason than you can?
No, actually I'm looking for water stones so it can evolve a Shellder.
So how do you do trading in that to evolve your Graveler or your Kadabra?
Actually, I wondered that too when I first started. So there is no recipe for it, so you have to do creative mode. But there's a trading table. So you and another person both right-click on a trading table, and you like pop into like a trading thing and say, I choose this one, and you choose that one, and then it just goes bloop and trades. And they actually gain boosted experience from it.
But there's no wireless trading tower you can build? So everyone can offer you their sweet Bidoofs?
And the PC only has 8 boxes, so... Although there are only 140 implemented Pokemon out of random generations, mostly first generation, they have like 180 total in the works, so.
So, speaking of Pokemon, I'm going to deal your segue.
You fiend!
Remember when you played Pokemon Red, and there was Missing No, and you're like, oh my god, Missing No, I have so many items. And so all the little things people told you on the internet, which was young and virginal. Now, who am I kidding? The internet was never virginal.
It was for, like, 5 seconds, and then people found out about it.
No, when Al Gore created the internet, Al Gore said, let there be porn, and then there was. So.
Okay, I guess. I will have to bow to your elderly wisdom.
But in addition to porn, there were many rumors about that truck.
Oh, yeah, that you could push with strength and get a Pokeball with Mew in it.
Togepi was another common rumor back in the time.
Peekaboo, which was actually a rumor around Meryl, but people didn't know what it was called, so they just called it Peekaboo. And...
Or Venustoise.
I've never heard of that, but that sounds
awesome.
And
various Pokemon fusions.
I want a,
Charizilla.
A Venusaur with cannons mounted on its back.
That's exactly what it is.
Awesome.
It's also got a shell around it.
Way back when, in the inception of GameFAQs, I was one of the first people to go put the Missing No glitch on there, but someone already had, and I just didn't read it.
Nice.
I know, right? All sorts of fun times. Things like this are rarely true, but you never hear about them anymore.
That's because we have the internet and fact-checkers and mods.
And everything is getting to the point where everything is just so simple, it's really hard to post any kind of rumor about whatever it is.
And you have the reverse situation with games like Ogre Battle and Ogre Battle 64 and Final Fantasy Tactics, where they put all sorts of really obscure things in them, like being able to unlock Cloud, but they did that so they could sell you a strategy guide that would tell you what obscure things and what dates and stuff you needed to.
The 64 one is really bad.
Yeah, I know. Ogre Battle 64 has all the information, but it's all wrong.
Not all wrong. It's just mostly wrong.
So, there used to be a lot of secrets in video games. Most of them were just urban legends. Hey, you can get a gun in Zelda if you beat it 25 times in a row without dying. But I'm wondering if the reason that there were all these secrets in video games was just so you could sell a strategy guide. And with the advent of the internet, that's no longer necessary.
I think some of them were, but you have the secret room in the first Legend of Zelda. You know the one I'm talking about. Why can't I think of what the message is?
It's a secret to everyone. Here, has some rupees. Get the hell out of my house.
Yeah, that one, which is just a secret. I mean, it's just there for if you find it and like, wow, cool. But Zelda's also a really explory game that encourages that sort of looking around.
Although, most of the time the reward is rupees, and you don't really use them on anything, so...
Well, keep in mind, in modern days, we have achievements, so if there's going to be a secret, the developer's going to flag it and say, hey, look, there's something you should be looking for.
Well, yeah, because you have all the ones that are like, hey, this achievement is secret.
And, you know, there are people who make their living making achievement guides and the like and having advertisements of them in this day and age.
So, it's hard to argue with the success of achievements, but do you think it's good to have an achievement for a secret? Should that be the reward for a secret?
I think a secret's usually its own reward.
Well, you haven't talked about this on the mics, but you talked about how in the new Tomb Raider game, which you really liked, you didn't like finding concept art because you didn't think it was enough of a reward for finding a secret.
Well, it's not finding a secret. It's all this other, like, well, I guess it is kind of a secret, but it's like collection. It's like, hey, there's these 20 Buddha statues you have to find in light in an area, and what you get for doing that is like concept art and stuff.
So what you're saying is not enough E-peen. And I just single-handedly stopped the show.
What?
I think I get what he's abbreviating.
An electronic penis, for those of you who cannot keep up.
Which would not be a pizza, or an inverse pizza.
I want a little bit more substance to it than, like, hey, you found all this stuff. Now here's this special, like, gold-plated shotgun or whatever. Because the new Tomb Raider is really a third-person shooter. It's just hiding behind the platformy explorer-y.
So, the other night, I was talking about what I wanted to play, and Alex suggested that I replay Epic Mickey. And I didn't really like it because I felt there was too much collecting and doing side quests with no in-game reward. And I prefer an in-game reward for doing stuff like that. Like, if I find a secret, I want 50 rupees, damn it.
Don't play Mass Effect 3. That's all it frickin' is. Hey, I left this on my planet with the Reapers coming in. You go find it for me.
Although you do sometimes get that in modern games. I mean, Banjo-Kazooie isn't very modern, but I'd call it in that same age as Ogre Battle and Tactics. And there was the ice key and the eggs that were secret for so long, people thought you actually couldn't get them because they were in the second game. But you actually could. They were just not fully implemented because the idea was for them to give you a bonus in Banjo-Kazooie 2. But that never panned out because you couldn't really trade them between N64 games the way Rare thought it would work.
Yeah, cartridges are kind of wonky for that. Memory cards are a much better idea for that purpose.
But they added it back in for the Xbox 360 editions of both those games. If you get the secret stuff in the first one and then have the 360 edition of the second, you get it as if you'd gotten the secret stuff in the second.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, they finally implemented it 13 years later. But it was really cool when we first found out, hey, you actually can get that ice key in Banjo-Kazooie, and people discovered how.
Just remember one thing. 13 years, they still beat Duke Nukem.
True.
Although they weren't actively developing it for 13 years, it was already done. They just said, oh, let's go put a fresh coat of paint on this guy. He's starting to look a little worn down. Where's Tom Sawyer?
That's not what they did with Duke Nukem?
The 360 ports of those are actually pretty good. The graphics are better. They changed the note collection system so that you actually collect notes instead of having a score. Although that made the game potentially un-100%able for a little bit before they patched it.
Oh? How so?
Do you remember, like, the optional jigsaw puzzles in the very beginning?
Quite.
Basically, they have Banjo running around in them. He also collects notes. As part of the code, he would actually collect those notes, and they just wouldn't record as part of your score. So when they recoded it, those would disappear if he collected them and you couldn't get them. They patched it and fixed it for a little while. That was a problem.
Causing everyone's OCD everywhere to flare up dramatically.
I don't have that problem.
I call it South Koreanism.
So as we said before, speaking of games they made to sell you strategy guides, Ogre Battle 64 has all these secrets and stuff. And even though the strategy guide is terrible, I know it's one of Zach's favorite games.
Yes, very much so. Yes, it is. One of the major secrets in the game are the Dragoon class and the Princess class. You can only get one of each, but they're some of the best classes in the game. They're just a pain in the ass to find.
I like to imagine a Princess class as being Peach that just has like a bunch of stuff.
She kind
of
looks like she kind of looks like Peach, actually. now that I realize it, it's basically Peach in a white dress.
Yeah, wedding dress, basically. She casts magic and then she gives everyone in your squad an extra attack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's incredibly useful.
Well, it makes squads that are already overpowered into god squads. You remember when my brother made the squad that was specifically designed to do that?
Yeah, he had the Dragoon, the Princess, the Lich.
I think it was another Spellcaster or Diana or something, and then I think it was a Paladin in the front.
That sounds right.
Basically, and he had all the best area
weapons.
Effect spells. So they basically got into a fight with it, and whatever was on the other side died. Of course, in Ogre Battle 64, it's not hard to do once you get farther in.
Well, that's really what you want to happen anyway, so.
Yeah, but it does take some of the challenge out of the game.
So, being a fan of Ogre Battle 64, Ogre Battle for the Super Nintendo is one of the games I wanted to play for this podcast. And knowing that he might enjoy it, I invited Zach to play as well.
I wanted to like this game.
Sum it up in one word. I think
tedious.
That was... I was just going to go with a sigh. I think that pretty accurately describes it.
The level...
Ogress.
The levels just took so damn long.
So should we start by describing the game really quick for the viewers or listeners? Audio viewers who didn't play this game.
You guys are watching the sweet waveforms in Microsoft Windows Player, right? When you listen to us?
That's
or like the road as you drive?
That's the preferred method, by the way. If we didn't tell you that before, that's how you should be ingesting this podcast.
I've been doing it all wrong.
I know. Listen with your eyes, not your ears.
Synesthesia for the win. So basically, how Ogre Battle works, you have a set number of squads, and you pick out the different units you want to put in those units. Different ones like Fighter, Paladin, Amazon, they all have their own strengths and weaknesses, and you position them, and then you send them off to try and kill everyone that isn't you.
The units are all fantasy-based, if the game Ogre Battle didn't tip you off. So you have things like knights, wizards, archers, dragons.
Are there actually archers, or just Amazons in this one?
There are not actually archers, but Amazons have a bow and arrow.
Octopus monsters.
Yeah, I forgot about the octopi. They're not in Ogre Battle 64.
I don't think either one of you guys got far enough to, but there's actually mermaids too.
Yeah, I knew that. I did not get any.
I didn't either. I kept having to chase one off. It's like, hey, I'm a mermaid with two octopi with me.
So, spoilers, like, guys, much like Harvest Moon 64 and Harvest Moon, me and Zach are going to be comparing this a lot to Ogre Battle 64.
Because it's a better game, so.
Well, in a lot of ways.
You can see a lot of the ideas that they had for this one, but one thing, the interface is bad. I mean, you probably noticed that.
Well, it takes forever to go from selecting your unit to getting your unit to move where it wants to go. And then you have to sit there and wait for it to go there. And then there's, like, combat and...
Waiting for it to get there is just part of strategy games in general. I mean, you have to wait for guys in StarCraft to march across the map. Or get stuck on a ramp.
Yeah. Well, they take a long time in this game. And then when two squads meet, they have a fight. Each unit has a certain number of attacks it gets, depending on its position. And whoever does more damage to the other is win.
Is win. Unanimously.
That's right.
Is the winner. And they sort of bunce back the other unit.
Bunce?
Bunce. I've been watching too many Rooster Teeth Let's Plays. I'm losing all my gubbins.
Yeah. So
it's
they
pop.
They go flying away, you know.
Or die if you defeat all of them.
Well, yeah, if they're all dead, they just disappear off the map. But if they aren't, they go away. And they might retreat, or they might keep coming after you, depending on how much
whether you defeat
units
the leader.
They've got left.
One of the problems with this game that's fixed in Ogre Battle 64, see, we'll be saying that a lot, is if you kill a unit in this one, the squad can just go to any fortress and regain a perfect copy of that unit. If you kill the leader, they have to go back to the base to get a leader. But it means there are a near endless number of foes to grind through.
Well, I think there's a limit to how many times they respawn.
There is not a limit to how many times they respawn.
Really? Because it felt like there was a
eventually,
you know,
you just kill
when,
them.
It might be when you get to a certain point on the... You take a certain fortress, not the main base. Because I found that a couple levels, like, they just stop spawning after
a while.
Is that
because you killed all of them?
Yeah. But there was a lot of them that, like, you'd kill everything in the unit, and they'd come back.
Sometimes they just have multiple identical units. They don't actually respawn.
That might be the case, then. I think the other part of it is that in this one, when you fight the bosses, their units respawn in their squad.
Instantly, because the bosses are always on their base.
So it means you can't really get through them. In 64, you could viably, it didn't happen often because the AI was iffy at best, you could eliminate every unit in the enemy squad, leaving the leader standing there looking around wondering how the hell he's the last guy alive.
So it might sound okay because your units level up like an RPG in this game. So it might sound okay that the enemies are infinitely respawning because you can grind them for experience. But one of the stats you have in this game is your alignment.
The longer you take, your alignment drops, as well as any time your bases get...
That's your reputation. They're different. Oh. I'm getting there.
Alignment is unit alignment, specifically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Units each have an individual alignment. If they kill a unit who's a lower level than them, their alignment goes down.
It's actually more than 3 levels lower, specifically.
And the lower your alignment, the more reputation you lose when you take cities, which is what you need to do. On the flip side, if your alignment is high, you gain reputation. But that means you need low-level units. Which means if you're just grinding because there's an infinite number of enemies, your alignment's going to plummet. Alignment also affects promoting characters to higher classes. It's pretty easy to get your wizard so low in alignment, he can't become a mage.
One of the things alignment also affects is that characters with high alignment do better during the day and worse at night.
I actually liked that feature.
There are a couple of features I took out of Ogre Battle 64 that I like, and that's one of them.
You mean took out of SNES for 64?
No, other way around.
They took them out of Ogre Battle 64 when they were making it.
Like,
I totally knew what you were talking about.
So I feel like we haven't really described how this game plays.
Well, I think we did. I mean, you give your units orders to go take bases, and then you sit back and watch.
Yeah, pretty much. You don't have any active hand in combat other than changing the strategy, which is best, strong, leader, or weakest.
That actually,
what's the difference between best and strong?
Strong attacks the enemy with the most HP. Best attacks the one that your unit will do the most damage to.
Okay.
Oh, I thought it was the one that had the highest damage output for your side.
I assume best was just the replacement for autonomous, so I automatically took all my guys off of it.
Autonomous is the replacement for best, Zach.
Hey, I know what I'm talking about. Well, you forgot to mention the tarot cards.
I was getting to that, and then I got interrupted about four times, so... Because that's what we do on this podcast.
This is the problem with having more than two people. I need to control my podcast. Tyler, talk about tarot cards.
Okay, so...
Shut up, Zach. Every time you take a building of any sort, you have a chance to draw a tarot card. I think there's a limit on how many you can have.
16.
I was apparently pushing that limit almost all the time. So you can draw a tarot card. When you draw the tarot card, it affects the group that took over the city. It may not. It may affect everyone. You're also given the option of keeping that tarot card. You can use tarot cards in combat for certain effects. The Priestess card, for example, will heal your entire party. Chariot, which is actually just a guy with a hammer, so I'm not sure why it's called Chariot, will attack the enemies. Sun hurts everyone on the combat field.
It's based on their alignment. It does more damage to low alignment units and less damage to high alignment units.
That does make a certain amount of sense.
I kept hurting myself with it.
Because no talking point is complete without comparing it to Ogre Battle 64, this is another thing they removed from 64 that I would have liked to see them keep.
It's really the only way you get to interact in combat, which...
Other than telling them to haul ass out of the fight once your ass has been kicked?
Well, yeah, I guess there's that, but...
You might not like 64 because my friend David rented Ogre Battle 64 before Zach got it, and I asked him what he thought about it. He's like, it was really dumb. You couldn't really control the combat at all, so I didn't like it.
That's not the point of this game, and I went into this game fully knowing that and was still disappointed by it, so...
The fun of this game comes between managing your squads between levels, getting to rank them up to new classes, seeing their powers grow, trying to manage their alignment so you can have some paladins.
That's a pain in the ass.
It is. It's a lot harder in this one, I feel, than it was in 64.
Oh, it looks...
64.
Well, yeah, because you're grinding a lot more than this one.
Although I couldn't get guys to chaotic when I wanted to most of the time in Ogre Battle 64, whereas they were just plummeting down there.
I always have the opposite problem in 64. It's like, hey, here's your best unit. No one ever wants to see them coming.
So basically this game is move things around map, watch fights, and level up your characters and give them better equipment so that you can watch them do better.
And the reward structure isn't getting stronger. It's actually sort of similar to Final Fantasy Tactics in that regard to me. You get to see your squad become more like you want it. You get to have cool paladins leading sweet wizards. You get to have maybe a cool holy dragon or a Tiamat. But this game has some pacing problems. The reward structures don't come nearly fast enough because the level, on average for me, was taking 2 hours. And they were getting longer as I went.
I think I got farthest in this, is what we ascertained from... In the last level I played, it took me 3 hours to beat the thing, and I just... By the end of the level, I didn't care. I just wanted it to be over.
And you were on what, level 7?
6 or 7, something like that.
I think I was on 6, so I think you were on 7.
Well, and there's enough going on that I really wanted to be playing another game, but I couldn't because
I did.
Kept getting interrupted.
I was watching Pro League of Legends games while I was playing this. You do have to find some good background noise because it is one of those hard things. I think a podcast like this one would be really good to listen to while playing this.
It is.
But I don't think you can really play another game unless you're Zach.
When I was playing this, I had it going. I was playing XCOM, and I was listening to either music or a podcast of some kind.
Well, not that I was playing on an emulator, but if I was, I would have been speeding it up so it wasn't quite as painful to play. So...
Another thing they fix on the Ogre Battle 64 version... Your units move a lot faster, and the maps are a lot smaller.
The maps in this one are really freaking huge.
Especially for how fast your units move across them.
The way the units moved did make me laugh.
Oh?
Well, they just kind of skid across the battlefield.
Well, I like to imagine it as a general sitting with a map and, like, pushing little markers across.
That doesn't mean it wasn't funny.
Yeah. I agree with Zach, but I think I'm just spoiled on the 64 one, which required the expansion pack, because the graphics are not really good, but for the 64, they look nice. They're very stylized.
I acquired the expansion pack because I've never taken it out.
I think most people who owned an N64 with an expansion pack just stuck it in and never took it out.
No, I was paranoid and for some reason thought games wouldn't work if it didn't have the correct pack in, so I was switching for a while. But I don't know where my original memory is now.
I actually remember putting that in after, I think, I got
Donkey
it for,
Kong.
Yeah, for Donkey Kong, and then I went and played Ocarina with it. I'm like, this looks so much better. I'm not sure if it actually looked better, but I thought it looked better.
some of the things I would have liked to see from this game.
A story?
Well, I was saying some of the things that this game had that I'd like to see go into 64. I kind of liked the octopus, and then, one, the witches in this game are actually freaking useful.
Yeah, but they don't promote to anything, which still makes them pretty weak. You can demote them and promote to princess if you get a royal crown, and we've established already that princesses are OP, but you're not guaranteed to get any royal crowns in this game. On the other hand, it's possible to get a bunch.
It's like the Black Knight in 64.
It is.
You're only, well, except for the fact that you're not guaranteed any.
Yeah, I actually got a thing for a special unit in this. I got a blood seal, which lets you promote a knight to a vampire.
Oh, that's
amazing. Oh, really?
Yeah, I just got it on the debonair level, so I didn't actually get to use it.
I might have one, but I don't remember. Because the item screen, oh god, the item screen is a pain in the ass to read.
Yeah, did you ever actually go and buy something from a shop?
Yeah, yeah. I bought a whole bunch of cures after I had a line queued up at the temple on the last level I was playing at. Like, everyone was over there like, hi, we need a revive. Get this guy up. He's dead.
Another thing about the 64 one, whether this is better or not, is up for debate. Your squads have to carry items. You don't just have items that are global.
I actually like that feature because it means
you have to outfit
the tactical elements. Like, okay, this unit could be carrying a whole bunch of cure leaves.
Or a cleric.
Which makes a lot more sense, and I think I actually would like that better. I had a horrible time going about actually equipping anything on anyone in this game, and it's not terribly convoluted. It's
you can't
just
tell.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Whereas in 64, all the like special weapons have different graphics, so you can see in the battle.
And it actually brings up the screen and tells you everything they've got equipped.
Well, yeah, and it's a lot more micromanagey. They have full like paper dolls, like they're an RPG character.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to get items from shops is to find a town that has a shop in it, then check afterwards, after you liberated the city, to see whether or not there's a shop there, or whatever other special buildings there are.
Yeah, see, 64 alleviates that again, because whenever you click on a town, it's got a little emblem that's either the Witch Den, which is the replacement for the temple, or the shop icon, which is like, oh, well, I can go buy stuff there.
Or nothing, if there's nothing there.
Which is most of them, but still. I did like the fact that petrification wasn't a unit slaughter.
Yeah, as it petrification is in 64, you're petrified until you go heal.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, if your leader's petrified, you're extra screwed. All right, so let's talk about the story about this game.
There is one.
You're the Revolutionary Army. You have to stop the evil empire.
The Zenobian Empire.
I thought it was the
No, you're in the Zenigatarian Age, but it's the Zenobian Empire.
Yeah, that's why they're called the Zenobians in Ogre Battle 64, Zach.
Ah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, they're like the only gauge of your Chaos Frame. Is it good?
Yeah.
No, I didn't get him. Okay, I'm boned.
You get Bis, or Bisk, or whatever his name is, if it's bad.
Bisk is pretty good. He's pretty
Nobsta-Bisk.
Badass.
Nobsta-Bisk.
Well, he's a werewolf, so he gets better at night.
Oh, okay.
You still get his awesome sword regardless, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently there are werewolves and vampires and all sorts of neat stuff in this one, but I didn't get any of them because I didn't
Skeletons,
care.
Ghosts, dragons,
I had a fairy. I had a fairy and a dragon at one point.
Yeah, I had a fairy, a dragon, a worm, a hellhound.
That's W-Y-R-M, not just a big pink worm following
earthworm,
around.
Earthworm! I choose you, and you just, like, huck an earthworm in your opponent's face.
Hey, I don't think there's been
Jim.
I don't think there's been an earthworm Pokemon unless you count Diglett. Okay, I think we can say our recommendation of this game is don't play it.
Or go play Ogre Battle 64 instead.
It is available on the virtual console.
It is. $10. It's much better spent than your $10 on this.
This was only five.
Eight.
Eight, whatever.
And you have to buy it in increments of 10, so.
Oh, right, that's why I had to buy $10, even though I already had five.
Can I just comment how much I hate the buy a pre-planned amount of money model?
Yeah.
I understand why companies do it. It sucks for the consumer.
It's off on the Wii U. You just buy stuff on the Wii U.
It makes a lot more sense to just buy a certain amount. At least this one is like, every 100 is a certain amount of points. I mean, the Xbox Live model is, hey, it's an amount that we say so, because we say so.
I can at least do the math on the 360 stuff. As much as I love League of Legends, I have no idea how many League of Legends fun bucks I have left.
So I don't understand why, as a consumer, you can't just say, I want to pay $4.55 or however much, and just pay that amount instead of buying it in $10 increments.
Because they make more money this way.
I know, that's why they do it. It sucks for the customer.
Yeah, well, you're Microsoft. They can do whatever they want. So anyway, anything we liked about Ogre Battle now that we're done salvaging it? I think we said the tarots. I actually like the alignment system. I much prefer the tweaks they made to it in the 64 one. And another thing, you can see your reputation in this one. 64 keeps your reputation, but you can only check it at the end of the game.
And this one at least tells you about the fact that reputation is a mechanic. 64 never does. It's like, hey, we won the war. And they go, get the hell out because your chaos frame was so low. But they never told you anything about it.
So the first time I tried to play this game, I could not play it for more than about 30 seconds at a time because the interface was just so bizarre
bad
to me.
I don't think the interface has improved that much in 64, to be honest.
It feels like it has to me, but I think, as you pointed out, I think it's just because of the fact that I played 64
so much.
It
looks a lot prettier.
The first few levels, though, are tutorial, and I think it does a good job telling you about all the different elements in the game. However, there's just an interface cliff. It's so unfamiliar to me compared to every other game I've ever played. I don't know how they came around to this design when it's so different than everything else. It's weird. It's so strange.
I can see how it would work. I think my biggest problem with it was that they had all the the weapons and stuff were all jumbled together with all your other items. So you never knew what exactly you were doing. I had one that was like light. I think it was an axe or something like that. Couldn't tell what kind of thing it was because it was just light and then a little symbol that was impossible to read.
Potentially an axe. Also maybe a flower.
So how would you improve it, Tyler?
Well, I think my biggest problem with this game is lack of a plot that's readily apparent. You have to play the game for longer than I was willing to reach the plot. And there was nothing to keep me invested in it.
Trust me, I got farther.
It stays.
It's still not there.
There's not much plot. There are a bunch of story elements and mini-episodes, though. It's actually kind of like League of Legends in that there's not a plot, but all of the characters have a real interesting story to them. Like when you go to the level with Knappus, you hear all about him and Gilbert and their falling out. And with Deneb, you find out what she's been doing and how she's this cute witch who's utterly evil and experimenting on the villagers, so they want her thrown out.
But sounds people awesome. But
people are debating, you know, should we kill her for this? Or should we let her go because, you know, her sins are terrible and she should be deposed, but should we lop her head off?
This was never presented to me through the short amount of time I spent playing it, but I feel like there's, I don't know, something to get me invested in the game was not presented early enough.
I can see that.
I can see that.
It's like we've known each other for a long time.
Nah, we've just met, right?
Right. So, anything else we want to say about Ogre Battle?
I just made 64.
I feel like there's a good game in there, but it's hiding. So,
Ogre Battle 64 is much better.
It
we'll have to get to that.
Into 64.
Ogre Battle
is evolving.
Your Ogre Battle evolved into Ogre Battle 64.
So I think we're going to go play some Naruto, but before that, Tyler, what are we going to play next week?
What are we going to play next week? We discussed this, and
something
now
made by Nintendo, I thought was the
something
consensus.
About a legend.
Oh yeah,
yeah, like an early one or something. I'm not
okay. So yeah, that's right. Next week we're going to play the first Legend of Zelda.
And Zach, you've never played a Zelda game through, right?
No, I haven't.
So you're going to join us for this?
I'm going to take a shot.
It's a lot different than Ocarina. So if you didn't like Ocarina, you might.
It wasn't that I didn't like Ocarina. It was just that I think I got there, and then something else came up.
Jabba's belly is also kind of a pain in the ass.
I hate that
and
level.
That was the other thing. Is like I tried, and then something else came up, and I'm like, I can go do something else.
I prefer the water temple to Jabu's belly.
So next time on Last Time, League of Legends. I mean, The Legend of Zelda.
League of Legends of Zeldas.
That'd be interesting.
Zelda
it?
Leagues. I want Zelda League Blitzball.
Oh my god, yeah. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, fully owned by its host.
All the material referenced herein and the games reviewed are property of their respective owners, obviously.
You can find more episodes and other insightful products at lasttimeonvideogames.com.
The sweet theme song's by me.
If you'd like to contact us, you can email us at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
If you're so enamored with a specific host that you'd like to reach us individually, you can reach me, Tyler, at tyler@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Or me, Jeremy, I'm single, ladies, at jeremy@lasttimeonvideogames.com. That's G-E-R-E-M-Y.
With a G. No controllers were harmed in the making of this episode.